You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation about the developments of the past few days with respect to Russia and Turkey, turning now from Turkey to Russia with one of the country's preeminent experts on that country. He is Dr. Stephen Blank, these days a senior fellow for Russia at the American Foreign Policy Council, but a man who has taught and written and thought very impressively for many, many years, among other places at the U.S. Army War College. He is the author of some 900, it makes my head hurt, 900 monographs and scholarly articles and books, and is always, again, a welcome contributor to our program. Thank you so much, Stephen Blank, for joining us.
It's my pleasure to be there.
We were just talking with Dr. Harold Rode, a man you know well, I'm sure, about what was going on with this attack by a Turk against the Russian ambassador that led to his assassination. I'm interested in getting your take on what the Russian attitude is, not just towards this horrific incident, of course, but more broadly towards the Turks. Harold described them as in a very weak position, Putin quite dominant. I'd be interested in kind of your read on how, if that's so, Putin is likely to respond to all of this.
Well, I think that Harold is quite right about the balance of forces between Russia and Turkey. The Russians have the upper hand. Turkish policy has been distinguished by its ineptitude, unfortunately, for Turkey. And this has left them with very few cards to play with regard to Russia. And as a result, the Russians have been able to establish a position of superiority on a bilateral basis. Turkey needs Russian support to keep the Kurds in Syria from taking over, keep a lot of power in Syria and their enemies of Assad. Even though Turkey is an enemy of Assad, it's more concerned about the Kurds, and the Kurds in Turkey are also a weak point that Russia has exploited over the years. Turkey depends on Russian energy to an unhealthy degree.
Our guest is Dr. Stephen Blank. We're talking with him about Russia, a country he knows very well and has documented and taught about for many, many years. Steve, when you look at Russia today, one of the things that strikes me, you could miss it altogether in the current controversy about Russian hacking, which seems to be the only preoccupation of a lot of folks in Washington. But there's a lot of other things that the Russians are up to, including very impressive and quite ominous nuclear buildup. Would you talk a little bit about how that fits into Putin's grand designs and perhaps in particular a very, very troubling development, a submarine drone capable of immense damage known in the West as the Canyon system?
Yes. Well, nuclear weapons are essential to Russia for many reasons because, one, they cannot compete with Western, particularly American, conventional superiority, so they have made nuclear weapons the priority procurement item in their defense budget. Second, by retaining and modernizing their nuclear weapons, as they have had to do now for in the last 5 to 10 years, Russia reasserts itself as one of the great powers in the world. In a sense, nuclear weapons for Russia are like the mirror for the queen in the Snow White fairy tale, where the queen always is asking, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? And as long as you have nuclear weapons, the answer is I am.
Not so much fair, but powerful, for sure.
Powerful, right. And it is a weapon that the Russians use, I believe, for intimidation purposes. I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, the Russian political culture under Putin is an intimidation culture, and nuclear weapons are, of course, intimidating weapons. And they like to make this threat. And I think it fits very well with their strategy overall, which is much broader, I think, than the common Western misconception of escalating to de-escalating. That is, in the middle of war, that they're going to go first with nuclear weapons in order to force NATO or maybe China to de-escalate. I think that actually they attempt to use nuclear weapons from the beginning to control all escalation processes in a crisis and intimidate NATO into not doing anything if they try to make a quick strike at somebody and present them with a fait accompli.
Now, when you say, Dr. Blank, just quickly, use nuclear weapons, do you mean in that sense literally use them, or do you mean use them as a technique for dissuading your opponent from taking action, to sort of a deterrent
idea? I use them in the political sense. I should be more clear. That is, they're going to get up there and say, we have nuclear weapons, don't threaten us, you know, as a result.
No matter what we do.
No matter what we do. So the attempt is there to make a fait accompli on a quick strike against somebody like Ukraine and prevent any action, even at the conventional level. Now, with regards to the submarine drone, of course, they are following our example in investing in drones, hypersonic weapons. The general global tendency towards moving towards what are called autonomous weapons, that is, weapons that do not need a human being to guide them.
At least one on board. That's the key point. They may be guiding from afar.
Right. The platform does not need a human being on board. So what they are trying to do is keep up with the West and deploy this, but they're also doing it particularly with regard to nuclear weapons, which is something we have not done.
When we talked with Harold Rode, he was talking a bit about how this fits into a larger strategic context. For Russia in particular, the larger strategic context is the incoming Trump administration, at least in part. And I'd be very interested in your view, Dr. Stephen Blank, of Rex Tillerson, the man Donald Trump has designated to be his Secretary of State, a man who's probably well known to you. He certainly is well known to Vladimir Putin. And there's a report today about how dramatically, he seems to have shifted his attitude towards the Russians and their lawlessness and their need to improve their, domestic politics to a man who is now a friend, a bemittled at that friend of Vladimir Putin and Russia. Talk about his attitude going into this job as you see it and how that's being read in Moscow.
Well, Moscow probably welcomes the appointment for the reasons you've outlined in your question. It's an interesting but also troubling appointment, and I think it's going to run into considerable opposition on the floor of the Senate, because it's also been revealed now that he was a CEO, I believe, of a offshore energy corporation with Russians headquartered in the Bahamas, and those kinds of stories always raise lots of suspicions, although nothing is proven. It's an interesting choice because, on the one hand, Exxon is well known for having extensive political and economic analysis capabilities, which he is undoubtedly fully on top of. He's obviously a proven chief executive and can manage a large corporation. And because of Exxon's global reach, he's obviously been in contact with many international leaders. So, I mean, there's a basis for appointing him. On the other hand, the closeness to Russia, the metals, this Bahamas corporation, raise a lot of problems. And also Exxon has lobbied against the sanctions that were imposed on Russia. And the real fear is that essentially that Tillerson will be lobbying for Exxon and to make a deal with Russia in the Trump administration rather than what the opponents of this policy want to see, which is a much tougher position towards Russia.
Yeah, a national interest over a corporatist interest. And in this regard, and this is a subject for another conversation I hope with you very soon, Dr. Stephen Blank, the question of whether it's really in America's interest to have ExxonMobil helping Russia exploit its Arctic oil and energy reserves. Fascinating times, fascinating topic. I thank you so much, Steve Blank, for joining us over the year 2016, and we look forward to talking with you early and often in the new year. Have a good one, my friend, and be well in the meantime. Next up, we'll talk with Diana West. We'll get her take on this issue of the Russian relationship and the left's blind spots with respect to it. Straight ahead.